Welcome to Soundprint. I'm Lisa Simeone. East Palo Alto is a small, poor city in the heart of a wealthy, famous area, Silicon Valley. East Palo Alto is not to be confused with just plain Palo Alto. The latter is an affluent community, mostly white, mostly well-educated, mostly employed. This division between the two Palo Altos goes back as far as anyone can remember. But back in the 1960s, the two parts of Palo Alto worked together on a daring project. Black children were sent to live with white families so they could go to better schools. It was a small act of civil disobedience with big consequences. On today's Soundprint, producers Catherine Barron and Victoria Malione introduce us to the students who participated in this sneak-out program and to the parents and teachers who made it possible. The story starts during the Great Depression in the Deep South, where a future East Palo Alto mother had to sneak out for her own education.
My name is Gertrude Wilkes. I was born in 1927. I was born in a little place called Ruston, Louisiana, on perhaps Mr. Kilgore's place, but this was a plantation. And we kind of lived from one plantation to the other. I started to work in the fields, I guess when I was 5 or 6, as early as I could get to the field, or to work, or to cut bushes, or to do whatever you could do to make the family go. We was very, very poor. I'm talking about like very poor. We didn't have plates. We ate out of bucket lids that we had just sitting around the table. I'm talking about like, you know, you got lard buckets, you got syrup buckets, and we ate out of the tops because we didn't have any plates. My brothers didn't go to school at all, because they had to cut logs and cut wood, you know, cut the wood and sell to help to make a living. I worked close with my father. I didn't like how the bosses treated him. My dad could not read or write. I wanted to go to school so bad, because I felt like if I could get me an education, I could do something for my dad. So Mom said, you want to go? Go on. And I did. You wasn't free just to walk on to school. I didn't tell anybody. I was in the, you're supposed to be working. And the rest of my family was in the field, see. And we used to laugh about that because we said it was the one time it paid off that all black folks look alike. And but my intent for, oh, praise God, my intent for going to go to school so bad was that when we would pick cotton, and when the guy would come and said, how much I owe you, preacher? Dad would tell me, so how much I got? We'd be figuring this up at the house, and I said, Daddy, we got so many and so many pounds. We worked so many and so many days, whatever the case was, I could keep up with this thing. So then my dad would stand back. He's tall, handsome-looking fellow, as you can see up there. He would stand back, and he said, well, you owe us so many and so many pounds. One day, my brother Dalton and I was picking cotton. But I guess we had about 50 pounds of cotton apiece in our bag. My brother and I sat on the side of the road. and we had been picking since early that morning. And he said, you know, it's just got to be a better way to make a living than this. He said, we ought to run away. And he said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to California. And he said, when you get to California and you get a job, would you send for me? And I said, yes. Yeah. So when I got to California, I'm fixing to be free, and I'm enjoying every bit of this, be a good citizen. And of course, I slacked up some. You know, I got a home with a roof on it, and a ride in a car, and all that kind of stuff. And we was blessed with three children, two boys and one girl. I first started to try and work with the schools. You know, I thought I was okay. But it seemed that that was not quite enough. When my oldest son came home and told me that he was not going to go to college, that's what he said. I said, what do you mean you're not going to college? He said, well, I haven't been taking college prep work, Mom. And he said, I can't go. I said, well, can't we do something about this? He said, well, it's too late. After having lost Otis, and Danny was right here, and he was saying to me, you know, I've got to do something right now. So that was when we started the sneak out with him. I was having a mother's meeting, and I just told my story, and I said, I have to do something. And so that was when somebody there said, well, he could stay at my house and go to school.
What I remember is that, well, first of all, Mrs. Wilkes' son, Danny, was the first one to leave, and he went over to Carberry. And I must have came over a few weeks after that. My name is David Rages, and I'm currently 57 years old. And I was a part of the sneak out program at Carberry High School in the late 60s.
I brought the name with me, but I just didn't think I'd have to use it. Because I would sneak off the plantation and go to school. But I didn't think I would have to use that in California because I thought I was free.
The sneak out program consisted of students from Ravenswood High School in East Palo Alto who felt that there was a vast difference in the level or type of education being offered at Ravenswood versus the schools such as Carberry High, Palo Alto High School, Gunn High.
The kids had to live in somebody else's home 4 days a week, go to school 5 days, and they could come home on the weekend. They took care of the kids, ate there, slept there. We didn't pay, you know, and there was never any money transacted at all.
And my mother had a friend who lived in Palo Alto who agreed to let me use her address as a place of residence so that I would be able to enroll in Carberry. And I think one time someone came by this person's house looking for me. And the lady's husband answered the door and told him there was nobody named David Rages that lived there. So the next thing I knew, I was being called into the principal's offices and being told that I was going to have to leave because I was not living there in the district. And I told my mother about it, and somehow they got it all straightened out. My younger sister, Mary, who was 2 years younger than me, and my younger brother, Michael, who was 5 years under me, went to stay in Palo Alto with the Freiberg family.
Mary slept in that room.
Yes.
It's a small house. It's only, you know, 3 bedrooms and 1 bath, but we converted it. We decided we needed more room, so we took our garage and cut it off there. I can show you here. I'm Ken Freiberg, and we kept the 2 children here for 4 nights a week, and then on the weekend they could go home. So that's how it started. So it turned out to be a sneak out. And we had to, I felt bad about it because we don't usually like to lie, but we thought it was a good lie.
The most poignant memory I have was lying together in 3 separate beds in the same room, like sardines in the room, and laughing and joking and throwing pillows, just having a good time and realizing that people are just people wherever they come from. And what a wonderful, beautiful experience that was. My name is Donald Freiberg. I'm 52 years old. I suppose you'd call me an adoptive brother to Michael and Mary, who stayed with us for 2 years. Was it 2 years they stayed with us?
This was our kitchen, and it was okay, but I bought this table at a supply store, and it was always here, and that was the end of the room.
Right. Yeah, and I used to come over and drink a lot of coffee and eat cookies right here at this table.
My name is Clarine Watts, and I had 3 children in the 60s that were involved in the Sneak Out program, David, Mary, and Michael Rages. And Michael wasn't too happy with the idea, but my daughter was, Mary was, and she wanted to get away from over there. And what we had to do is we just had to make that sacrifice and try to make it work.
I remember it being a challenge at the time, having nothing to do with Michael or Mary, whom we liked very much. But the fact that we were crowded already, plus the fact that we were 5 kids, 2 parents, and adding 2 to the mix, meant from a purely selfish standpoint that there were fewer hours to go around where we could spend with you.
My wife got involved with this program and decided, she said, if you're going to stay with us, I'm going to do a lot of homework. Because the children really were behind in trying to keep up with the rest of the classes. They didn't have the background, they didn't have the math skills, they didn't have the reading skills.
Because of the education that they were getting in the east of the freeway, it put them in an awkward situation, and it was very hard for those young people to come over here and to suffer some of the consequences because they didn't have the skills.
What I remember that about my classes was that they were different than classes I'd ever taken before. The one thing I remember is that they encouraged critical thinking, and I had never had that experience before, you know, where you could actually read about something, study something, and then give an opinion and write it down and think it out and argue it and everything. I had to work so hard just to make it through, that I didn't focus on anything else. And I felt really deprived because I missed that social kind of, you know, togetherness and interaction.
My name is Cheryl Branch Crum. I was a part of the Sneak Out program back in the early 1968, 69, and 70. Went to Palo Alto High. I lived over in Palo Alto 5 days out of the week, Monday through Friday, school days. It was a nice home, beautiful home. I had my own room, but I still didn't feel at home because I missed my home, feeling comfortable where I could put my feet up and relax. I spent more time in Palo Alto High than I did in East Palo Alto. I felt like I was an outcast because being around the children on the other side in Palo Alto, I started acting like them, talking like them. My mannerism became different. So I was different. And so I became teased. Like, I felt like I didn't belong. And so I kind of carried that on through my adult life.
Cheryl, I wanted to show you this picture. This was from my 16th birthday party at my sponsor family's home. So it was really nice. You know, I kind of blended in, tried to acculturate myself and just have a good time, best I could. You know, they say if life gives you a lemon, what you're supposed to do with it? Yeah. You know, make some lemonade out of it or something, pie, something. I'm Inez McDonald. I'm now married, Inez Taylor, but I was a McDonald child. Third child of Cleveland and Lily McDonald of East Palo Alto. I went to elementary school in East Palo Alto, and then I went up through Garden Oaks Junior High School. And at that point, I became what is now categorized as a sneak out program. We were pioneers in a sense. But I never felt like I ever lost my blackness. Now, when I look at those people who were left on the shore wondering where I went, because it was almost like you were almost spirited away over to this other area. And nobody knew what happened to you because you didn't have time to explain to your friends, I'm going to a new school. You just were there. And so they looked at us and wondered, did we think we were better than them? And I got a lot of that. There was no... In my heart, feeling that I was more privileged, I was just as scared and nervous and, you know, having to be in that situation. So I never just felt like, I'm going to a white school. I was terrified.
In an era when you've got the war in Vietnam and civil rights colliding and your own school going through its own crisis because of the transfer students, these things ping-pong back and forth. My name is Ron Jones. I'm 67 years of age, born here in San Francisco. In the 1960s, however, I was teaching at Cubberley High School, 1966 through 1969.
At the time, those were the 60s, and we know the Voting Rights Act was just passed, so the times were turbulent.
Joan Baez came, David Harris came. Student clubs were allowed to bring in outside speakers. But when the outside speakers were perceived as being agitators or inflaming the school, the student clubs were disbanded by the school. So the children were forced to take these issues off the campus.
You're listening to KZSU, Stanford, California, and we have a report from our walkie-talkie coordinator.
About 4 minutes ago, there was a group of Pali High students, I would say approximately 250 to 300. They were carrying signs that said strike.
Black Panthers were alive and well and, you know, teaching their doctrine. But Angela Davis was a professor, and, I mean, everybody was speaking out. Black pride was the thing at the time.
In my class, I had Norman Morgan as a sophomore. This was the kid that played football. And I remember he brought in one day, we had posters on the wall about different heroes of our culture, and he brought in James Brown. That's the first time we had James Brown on the wall of our classroom, and that was pretty exciting.
Put your pants up. Say it louder. Say it louder.
James Brown had that song, Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud, you know, and so that's all, you know, that was our mantra.
One more time. Say it loud.
When I first went to Cubberley, there were only a handful of black children coming from East Palo Alto. I think perhaps maybe 23 students came in, but perceived as an invasion. For the most part, they were abused. They were told they were of no value. Their voice didn't count. They didn't belong there. They should go home.
One thing I have to always have to preface what I'm saying with this, I tried to just fit in. I participated in a lot of stuff, after school stuff. I was a debutante. I was drill team. I was whatever, just having fun.
Abuse forms different ways. You can say it with a shrug. You can say it with a rolling eye, a look, a pamphlet called Sponge that tells black students to get out of the school completely.
Oh, they had some society. It was called Sponge. And it stood for Society for Prevention of Nerds from Getting Everything.
Oh, wow.
So there were some undercurrents. There was a lot of resentment. People didn't understand that we were just like those four little schoolgirls that they had to use the National Guard to march them into the classroom back in the South. We were just trying to attend school.
My name is Herman Ohm, and I came to become principal of Cubberley High School in 1970. And that was when I got here, the sneak-in program was going on, and I did everything I could to make that sneak-in program work. After I was here, I think probably in my third year, the administration at the central office in Palo Alto changed, and the sneak-in program died. They started to count the number of students who were here, which were not funded by the state because they were not legally enrolled with us. Then they started looking at where the kids lived, and they began closing it down. My sense was that it was not much of a life with not much of an integrated experience for them.
I never really felt a part of the class of 67 at Cubberley High School. Because the thing that just stands out so much with me, and I thought about it, and I said, you know, if I ever had to do this again, I wouldn't make this choice because of what I feel that I missed out on with my friends and the social thing. And you know, there's been, ever since then, there's been a certain disconnect there.
We never ate together. Never broke bread. We never walked over to East Palo Alto to see where these kids were coming from. We never met their families. We never saw them in their homes. We never made those gestures.
The education that I did get at Palo Alto High, it played an important part with my career, so I'm really grateful for that. So I can see where it did help out a whole lot. Today it's better, maybe because of what we went through. Usually that's what happens. Our mothers and fathers have to go through it to make it better for our children, and so I can sit here and be proud of that.
What I've always tried to instill in my kids, let me know what's going on with you. But my kids never gave me problems, so I think the sacrifices definitely helped. And I don't even know that they know my full story.
I've raised my family in East Palo Alto. I have three children. My son is 30, and I have a daughter who's 28 and a daughter who's 24. And my children all grew up and were raised in East Palo Alto. I'm proud to say that they're all free. They're not in trouble. Nobody's in jail, have a record, or anything like that. And I think that that's a real accomplishment.
I thank the Longwells for opening their home to me. They didn't have to do that. And, you know, and I just often wonder what made these white people take in two little black kids, you know. All praises be to them, Miss Wilkes, my parents, and everybody who came before me and who'll come after me.
Sneak Out was produced by Catherine Barron and Victoria Malione, with technical production from Seal Muller. The editor was Ingrid Becker. We have a little more information about this show for you. After starting the Sneak Out program, Gertrude Wilkes went on to serve as mayor of East Palo Alto and was on its first city council when it was incorporated in the 1980s. She remains active in local politics. There has not been a public high school in East Palo Alto since Ravenswood High closed in 1976, although there are two small charter schools in the area. Ever since a 1986 lawsuit, parents in East Palo Alto have had the opportunity to legally enroll their children in a voluntary transfer to eight neighboring school districts, effectively legalizing the Sneak Out program. There's even more information to be found on our website, soundprint.org, where you can also hear the program again, as well as find links to related shows, websites, and books. The address again is soundprint.org. By the way, we love hearing from you. The best way to get in touch is by email. The address is talkback@soundprint.org. We've gotten a nice little electronic pile of mail from our episode a few weeks back, which featured the show Children of the Hated, a story about the abuse suffered by children of Nazi soldiers left behind in Norway after the war, paired with My Father's Island, about a group of brothers who fled Germany before the war and found themselves on the Galapagos Islands. Michelle Q, who listens to us on KQED out of San Francisco, had this to say. I just listened to Children of the Hated. I had never known of this terrible story, another example of why any war is the ultimate evil and futility. I love your program. It's one of my favorites, always unique and often moving. Thank you. Thank you, Michelle, for writing, and thank all of you for listening. You too could have a comment read over the air. Just send an email to talkback@soundprint.org. And by the way, be sure to mention your local station. On the next Soundprint, Canada is welcoming unskilled laborers with open arms, but sending them back home just as readily.
And business can't wait. You know, we can't wait 3 years to bring in somebody that they need. So we've got an undercurrent of temporary workers while 800,000 people wait in a queue. They're sort of isolated in this bubble, right? They're not really, they're a part, but they're not a part of our society. They're cared for by their employer, their housing needs are met, all their needs, medical is all met. They're almost like a, they're almost like a country within a country. Yeah, they're almost like a country within a country, right? Separate admission, separate status, and it's a country that changes every 2 years.
The Wendy Workers and the Chicken Catchers, next week on Soundprint. CDs of Soundprint episodes are available for a small fee by calling toll-free 1-888-38-TAPES. That's 1-888-38-TAPES. Or you can order online at soundprint.org. Soundprint is produced by the Soundprint Media Center in association with WAMU and American University. Soundprint is production assistant Nkechi Mogekwu and audio engineer Jared Weisbrot. Our executive producer is Moira Rankin. I'm Lisa Simeone.